If Reality Check Radio enriches your day in life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Welcome back. We are joined now by Haimona Gray, a former insider and now whistleblower on the Tamahiri fiefdom, as he has coined it. Don't forget that you can text your thoughts to us on 2057 or email your questions to inbox@realitycheck.radio. Hello and welcome to the show, Haimona.
Hi.
So could you give us some background on your political involvement? I've just sort of hinted at it, but there'll be a lot more to it than just that, right?
Yeah. I guess like all New Zealanders, it's been all over the place, really. Yeah, no, I'm not a member of any political party at this time. Haven't been in a long time, really. I've been swayed by all of the major parties at different points in my life. And so, you know, I understand people say, oh, well, you know, you must have some sort of axe to grind for this particular party. And really, it's not about that for me. It's about the institutions. And it's really about the fact that there's charitable organizations and organizations that help people. And that's, I think that should be more important than their leaders. And if they are being undermined or if they are being somehow damaged by their leadership, then that leadership should change.
And in this particular case, it's John Tamahiri, who's basically the leader, or sorry, president of the Maori Party, very much involved in politics. And also he's running, as you mentioned, multiple charitable organizations. And in the news in the last few days, that you've played a bit of a key role in getting this into the news, I believe, the allegations around the use of census data by the Manurewa Marae as effectively sort of to canvass for votes for the Maori Party. And is there any more to the story that you can give to the listeners?
Basically everything that falls under the Whanau Order Commissioning Agency, which is a sub-brand of a larger organisation. I did call it a fiefdom, which includes the Waipadeita Trust, it includes the National Auckland Māori Authority, it includes a lot of different organisations. And so from that perspective, you're getting more than just one organisation being funded by stats to do good census work. You're getting dozens of organisations who often share staff, often share everything they're involved in, and essentially have one leader, and that leader is John Tamahiri at the top of them. So for a public government department to be essentially funding a organisation directly connected to the president of a political party, it's not a great look. The fact that Manurewa Marae has now been found to have been collecting that census information and handing it over to the Māori Party is the allegation here and is the real issue here. But I think the bigger issue is also the fact that when Stats NZ and when other government departments contract with Whanau Order Commissioning Agency, the Waipadeita Trust, any of these sort of groups under the Tamahiri umbrella, they are just contracting with him. And the people who engage in this might also be engaging political action at the same time. So there is a real privacy issue there that does need to be seriously investigated.
So you mentioned how these different people may work for these different or parts of these different organizations. You've got the same people who are all connected across these different organizations. So they look like they may be working or volunteering for a particular charity, but at the same time, they're doing that for a different group in Tamahiri's fiefdom, as you call it, or the Maori Party specifically. So you witnessed this personally then. Were you involved at some stage in this umbrella of organizations?
Yes. So in 2016 and 2017, I was the head of communications for what was then called Te Pau Matakana. It's now called the Whanau Order Commissioning Agency. And that itself was a sort of well-intentioned organization set up specifically to transfer funding from the government to community groups to do quite positive sort of social work, things that, you know, MSD could be doing, but they were proven to be unable to do with these communities. So that was the reason why I got involved. But as soon as I got there, it was quite clear that, I mean, we were all housed in the same building. The head of YPDA, the heads of the Final Order Commissioning Agency, the heads of all of these organizations, on paper, they had many different leadership structures and leadership roles. They had different boards. Some of them even had different CEOs. But at the very top, literally at the top of the building, is John Tamahiri. If you were working for one, so I was working specifically on Final Order, specifically in a communications role, I was now also being expected to work for the National Urban Māori Authority setting up a charter school. And I was also being brought into the Waipiraita Trust work as well. And none of this was in my job description. These all should have quite clear delineations, but we're all in the same building. We all, as staff, we were being moved across wherever it fit, wherever we really needed to. And so, as somebody with a background previously working in government departments, the idea that the government departments I came from were contracting with one specific organization and just that one specific organization, the reality I saw was that every organization in that umbrella had access, was doing that work. There was no delineation here, and therefore you may have been having a contract with a group with a specific CEO. I mean, the charter school I was setting up was meant to be under CEO Willie Jackson at the time. It was just before he left to join the Labour Party. But I never saw Willie Jackson. I saw John Tamahiri every week, and he would be asking what's going on with this charter school, a charter school that he had no involvement in on paper. So that was when I started to realise these are all the same entity. And if you're working with one, you're working with all of them. And I think contractually there's issues with that.
Just about the charter school specifically then, so were, did you have basically members of the Labour government, you know, before they got into government, who were working on charter schools before they got rid of them? It was,
yes.
So they were campaigning against them while they were setting one up.
Yeah, it was quite ironic. When I was beginning to put together this charter school, that was, had very good intentions. We were going to build sort of a high quality first class school for West Auckland. It would be predominantly Māori, but other people could also attend as well. But very much under the charter school model, we were told that Tamahiri had positive conversations with ACT leader David Seymour about charter schools, and we as an organisation, you know, wanted to continue this. And so we were beginning one. Then while we were putting this together, Willie Jackson departed, joined the Labour Party, and was basically forced to change his tune and become quite anti the charter schools. And a decision was made, so potentially between JT and Willie, we're just, all right, this school will be parked, and then just completely scrapped. So it never happened. A lot of people sort of spent a lot of hours behind the scenes putting it together, but then political reality, I guess, hit it in the face, and we had to give up.
And were you directly involved in the Māori Party at any stage before this as well? Or were you mostly connected with the Labour Party earlier on?
Yes and no. I was never involved with the Māori Party. Early in my life, sort of in my early 20s, I worked for a national MP. I then was a public servant for a number of years, doing mostly sort of media engagement and, I guess, problem-solving type of work. I even talked about that with John in my interview. I said, you know, I understand we may not necessarily be on the same side politically all the time, but, you know, I'm not really a national guy per se. I just, you know, I worked for someone who I believed in all the time. And he said, no, we don't mind. You're more than welcome here. This isn't an ideological organization. But the more time I spent there, the more it was clear that that wasn't really the case.
So I believe there's been a bit of a kind of a morphing of what the Māori Party has been about and what it's trying to achieve. Do you have any background for us that you witnessed? Like, what was the Māori Party kind of founded to achieve, the problems it wanted to solve, and how did this change with John Tamahiri's involvement or others? Because it's undergone quite a transformation in recent years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's undergone a massive transformation. And I think that transformation has really been a transformation to be closer aligned to the style and personality of John himself. Originally, you know, when I worked for a national MP, we were nationalism in a coalition government with Te Pāti Māori. So Tari Ngāti was a minister. Peter Sharples was a minister. There was no, Māori were not necessarily seen as left or right. They were seen as quite centrist and quite interested in just what is in the best interest of Māori, kind of regardless of who says it. If ACT says something that we support, like charter schools, great, we'll go along with that. If they're coming out with something that we disagree with, well, then we will disagree with that. That was the way the original Māori Party was. It was never meant to be a sort of strongly left-wing organisation. It was meant to kind of be strongly Māori organisation and to work in its best interests. But when John Tamariri became closely involved, which was, I would say, even before he became the president, especially since he's become the president, he's really escalated its turn to being quite a partisan, quite a reactionary organization. They've become a lot more antagonistic and a lot more, I guess, what you'd consider far left, really, which is not even necessarily Tamariri's sort of personal politics, but I think his personal politics, whatever wins, and he sees this as sort of the right political move right now, so he's latching onto it, and he's taking the party with him.
Now, you have a Substack as well that you write in. You've got a Twitter account where you tweet a lot about, and recently you've written about your personal experience or sort of opinions around some of this quite aggressive or nasty attacks that are coming out of a lot of these people connected in the Māori Party, specifically around attacking people for not being Māori enough. In fact, just in the last day or two, it was in Parliament, even Winston Peters was attacked with an insult along the lines of, you are a waste of Māori blood. These kinds of increasingly hostile statements, you know, usually from people aligned with the Māori Party, they're quite troubling to you, as you've written about. Where do you see, like, where did this come from? Why did this happen in the last few years?
Yeah, I think as much as I'd like to say, you know, this is something new, this is something quite worrying, and it has sort of a specific root in sort of John Tamariri himself, it doesn't. There has always been an element of Māoridom, not all of it, but definitely some within Māoridom who are quite negative towards anyone who they see as not following what a Māori should be, or how a Māori should believe, or who they should vote for, or who they should even talk to. There is quite a sort of almost sectarian style of with us or against us that can be really dismissive and negative. I think it's really shocking to see someone like Winston Peters, who, I mean, you know, I was, you probably wouldn't like me to point out the age issue, but, you know, here is a Komatua, here is, you know, culturally we praise and we look to our elders for knowledge and wisdom, and you don't always have to agree with them. My Komatuas don't always agree with me politically, but I respect them and I hear them out, and I would never say the kinds of things they're being thrown at Winston Peters. So the idea that he's a waste of Māori blood, you know, he's been an incredibly important and influential politician. He's had tremendous longevity, and to just dismiss him like this is, I think, incredibly disrespectful and really says more about them than it does about Winston.
And with the census data, that's this kind of triggered this discussion and the revelations around John Tamariri. But the census data itself is actually showing that there's a greater number of Māori youth and a larger number of young people are Māori, and so on. The demographics are quite strong. Do you see that this is that feeding into this iteration of Māori politics? That appears to be a lot more aggressive and assertive. Is it growing stronger, or are there just a few powerful sort of, you know, chiefs, as it were, like John Tamariri, who are kind of holding this together, because we on the other side of the aisle in the current coalition government, again, we see a very large, high proportion of MPs, members of cabinet, and high-ranking ministers who are Maori. You know, is there like a kind of a big division happening here? Is it a generational gap? Is there any kind of insight you have into what the future might hold for this current iteration of Te Pāti Māori politics?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I guess I don't think it's generational. I think it is it's a continuation of sort of a bit of a traditional division, but it's becoming more and more pronounced. I think what's really interesting and kind of informative is if you look at the example of Karen Chaw, ACT MP and Minister, here is somebody who is Māori, but was not necessarily raised amongst her Māori whānau, but, you know, as a minister has been incredibly successful. And I think a lot of other cultures that would be really celebrated. And I don't even necessarily think it's the young people who are fueling the negativity towards her and towards other people. I think it's more a clear division between people who see this need that you can only be one type of Māori and that you can only be one type of Māori person involved in politics. I think, yes, you have some quite young people out there who are quite passionate and being quite negative, but you also have young Māori on the other side who I think are being very disillusioned with this idea that they can't look at Karen Chaw and say, well, there's somebody who's actually had, you know, quite a challenging childhood and background, and she's talked about that, but she's made it through, she's thriving, she wants to help people who've had her similar experience, and whether you agree with their politics or not, that's a positive role model. So I think there are people out there who will recognize a good role model and say, well, you know, I don't necessarily like everything she stands for, but I like the fact that she's made it. I like the fact that she's here. And it's great to see one of us make it. And then you'll see others who say, no, only people who have their, or only people who have been raised on the Marae, who tick all of the boxes to being the ideal Māori, are allowed to be Māori. I think that's nonsense. I tick virtually all of them, and I disagree with a lot of them. Yeah, some would say, well, you're just an outlier, but I don't think I am. I know a lot of Māori who disagree with how this debate is changing and is moving, and who really worry that our younger people are being made into something quite hostile and quite negative to our elders, to people who are otherwise sort of really great role models, and sort of seeing the good in fellow Māori. I think there is a large youth out there who are worried about this and who don't like the way this is going, because they feel like, well, if we start sort of saying you're Māori and you're not Māori, maybe I'll be locked out as well. Maybe I'll be told I'm not Māori, and I don't want that. So yeah, I think there is fear, and I understand that fear.
Glad to hear that, and it feels a lot more positive than some of the pictures that are sometimes painted out there. And I think you get into these, you know, the stories that make it into the media, and they tend to be more negative. Like they tend to be, you know, you get a lot of negative slanted stories because they generate clicks. And there's a lot of people who are a lot quieter, who are watching in the background, who feel very uncomfortable by what's happening, and they may be in a much larger number, but you just don't hear about them at the moment. But it's glad to see someone like you speak up about this, and I see you get a lot of positive feedback from people on your Substack, on your Twitter account. Just very interesting to follow, and a lot of people, as you mentioned, from different politics. Right? It's not a political thing where people are agreeing on political points. It's very much an issue of how people are being treated as human beings.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the really important part here, is that we acknowledge that, you know, if everyone disagrees, yeah, one of my uncles votes New Zealand First, one of my uncles votes Te Pāti Māori. They like to, you know, wind each other up and sort of give each other a bit of grief every now and then. But yeah, if someone else came in and tried to criticize them, they'd say, hey, hold on, that's my family there. You know, we're allowed to make fun of each other, but, you know, at the end, it comes from a place of love, and we would never cut each other down. So I think that's something that we've always been pretty good at as a country, is accepting the fact that we're all a little bit different, but we shouldn't be so nasty, and we should not be making these statements that, you know, are being thrown at Winston Peters and Karen Shaw. I think we should, you know, celebrate the fact that we've got Māori in all the major political parties, and hey, that's great. It means there's a diversity of ideas out there, and we've matured.
Absolutely the case. And I've been studying New Zealand history some more, and some of it can be difficult to get into. But the thing that you realize in even a lot of the conflicts is that on the whole, you know, people got along very, very well from early on. And I think that shows in New Zealand society how well, you know, how cohesive New Zealand society ended up being, even with colonization, Maori and Pakeha together. And, you know, the little troubles that we have are almost, you know, just seem quite small compared to what you see overseas when you look at things, history from overseas, and how their conflicts were actually so much worse. It's like things kind of get blown out of proportion here a little bit, you know, and it can be really hard to get access to the history, like the positive side of history. And it's very, very difficult. And that's what I'm looking into at the moment, trying to find like a positive side of New Zealand history, because we often only just hear about the negative sides of it. And same thing with the present day, like a lot of negative stuff. And it's just great to hear something that's a bit more positive. Going back, just as we wrap things up, the John Tamahiri scandal, say that this gets properly investigated, the fallout is dealt with. You know, what do you believe needs to happen to this massive collection of organizations that are all sitting under one umbrella?
I think the reality is they need to just be what they have always claimed they are, which is separate entities, separate organizations with their own leaderships and hierarchy and structure. They should not be sort of one man's personal plaything. They should be what they have always intended to be. You know, I think Whānau Order was policy, you know, put in place by a national government, which was in coalition with ACT and a Māori party. You know, I see that, you know, there is some logic to the way that it's been founded. And if the Whānau Order Commissioning Agency was just that, and it was only that, then I don't think there would be these issues in the first place. The problem here is at the very top. I think you get rid of John Tamahiri from leadership of these organizations and you separate them all out. You know, you have Waipadata as a community health organization. It can keep doing good work. It just needs to be what it says it is.
Do you believe there's a serious risk that these various community organizations kind of go down with the ship? Like if Tamahiri is removed from the equation, that a lot of these don't recover? Or do you believe that there's still enough independence left within them, there's enough left into the mission and the work they do, that they can actually be properly split out and that they will survive and thrive, you know? Or is there a serious risk of them all being destroyed?
There's definitely a risk, but I think the reality is, and I think people need to understand that these organizations, I mean, virtually all of them existed before John Tamahiri's leadership, and they will exist afterwards. He's not the guy, he's not the community nurse, he's not the person doing the actual work on the ground. He's sitting at the top floor of a multi-story building, paying himself over $500,000 a year. I mean, you get rid of him, you still have the people on the ground doing the actual hard work. And so, yeah, I think if you can retain those people and you can make sure the organizations just stick to what they're meant to be doing, I see no reason why they can't actually thrive without him.
And there's a bit of, I guess, criticism from more so from the right wing on having like organizations that are targeted or funding that's specifically targeted at particular communities or sort of ethnically based. Have you got a good counter, say, for people listening who are saying, oh, all of these need to go and everyone needs to be treated the same and we just need to have one organization that deals with all people? Have you got a really good counter for that argument?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I understand that impulse, but what I would say is, I mean, think practically. In a lot of the situations, and when I was working for the Whānau Order Commissioning Agency, we were getting good results. We were getting good results for less public service dollars than MSD. We were reaching people who otherwise wouldn't be reached. we were improving lives and we were doing it as ethically and, you know, on above board as we could. So I don't necessarily think the idea that something is sort of ethnically targeted is necessarily the issue. The issue is about sort of the leaders and openness and transparency. But, you know, if, let's be practical here, if it works, it works. You know, if you've got something that is actually helping a group in society that is sort of statistically doing poor in health and in other stats, then why not try it? I understand that sort of philosophically people may be uncomfortable with it, but I'm far more practical than that. I care more about the outcomes for the people. If it works, it works. Just as long as everybody's behaving in sort of an ethical and legal way, that's sort of what really matters to me. And I think that's what we should really care about as taxpayers, is are we funding something that actually helps people? And is the funding actually going to the people who really need it? If it is, yeah, I'm not too fussed if it still has a Māori name or if it doesn't. I think if it works, it works.
Thank you very much for those insights. And that's a great answer. And I like that approach to say, hey, as long as we're getting results, as long as we're measuring things equally and getting good value for money and improving people's lives, and that needs to be the priority. And I think a lot of people just feel like maybe these organizations get a pass, you know, like they're not expected to behave just like everyone else. But it's great to see you come out here and explain how it works, you know, what's currently going on the inside and what can be done to improve it so that they are actually doing their job properly. So it's thank you for coming on. And if you've got any final words for people, let me know. If you'd like to encourage people to kind of follow your work, because I know you've written quite a few interesting insights into all of what we've discussed today in far greater detail. And if people would like to go and read those things that you've written, where do they find them?
Yeah, sure. So thank you for having me on. And yeah, if you go on to sort of substack.com and just look up Haimona, Haimona, I'm the only one there. Yeah, so you'll be able to find me. And I've covered this and sort of other similar issues, including sort of where I see the problems of this type of partisanization of sort of Māoridom and where I think the worries of this practice. So yeah, if you're interested in that type of thing, give it a look up. But yeah, no, thank you so much for having a chat with me.
Well, thank you, Haimona, for joining us this afternoon. And to all of the listeners, we will be back right after this break.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057, that's 2057, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.